Keep sharing your thoughts about writing and social media. We'll come back to our teachers shortly. But let's recall your conversation this week about whether the booming stock market and the global economy is in another bubble.
This is Frank Wheeler from Goose Bay, Alaska. And yeah, the stock market is really scary. It's been artificially propped up with $85 billion a month in stimulus money for several years now. And when that ceases, it's not going to be a good time to have all your eggs in that basket.
In fact, Frank, there are some indicators that investors are pretty scared of the baskets out there and have turned to real estate as a safe haven.
It boils down to this, which is when you have risk in the financial sector, the banking system obviously looks for certainty, and it gets certainty in collateral, and the best form of collateral is property.
Faisal Islam is the economics editor for Channel 4 News and author of The Default Line, the inside story of people, banks, and entire nations on the edge. He's based in London, a place like New York City, known for its high-value properties and hot real estate market. But as we read today about the Federal Reserve increasingly leery about backing off all of its stimulus, Faisal Islam says there's a fascinating game of globalized monopoly being played out, and the street names aren't in Atlantic City, New Jersey. They're on the other side of the Atlantic.
So you may think the U.S. Treasury is the world's reserve currency, but we in Britain, we have a contender for that title, which is called a London condo. This has become a form of world reserve currency. Perhaps there's a connection where some people have seen some unthinkable doubts in the sanctity of the U.S. Treasury. They feel that UK property, or more specifically central London property, offers them that certainty of a store of value. It used to be the world's elite, the world's oligarchs, the world's oil sheikhs would come to London and they'd buy property in order to maintain it as a store of value. What's really fascinating right now is not that. That's always been the case and has been the case since the 19th century. That has gone into overdrive, and you have ever more elaborate schemes designed for that end of the market. But what's totally fascinating is that that has now spread. You pre-sell these apartments to not to the super rich of the world, but to the world's growing middle classes where the savings are. And where are the savings? The savings are in East Asia, in Malaysia, Hong Kong, Singapore. So you have UK real estate developers flying out to Hong Kong and to Kuala Lumpur, hiring out five-star hotels and selling maybe one-third, maybe half of entire developments in London off plan in advance to East Asia's middle class. And we're talking doctors and dentists. We're not talking the super rich bankers of these places, because those guys don't have pension systems. They don't have social security systems. They don't have security of their livelihoods in older age because their societies haven't provided. So this is an amazing story of globalization.
You know, as a journalist and as someone who follows the economy, you could look at a system where the numbers don't seem to add up. And if it's working, everyone is a genius. If you're someone who warns that, hey, the numbers aren't adding up and it crashes, then you're a genius. But predicting when the fact that it doesn't add up is going to blow is really, really the hard part here. How vulnerable do you think the global economy is to all of the phenomena you describe that don't really add up?
I mean, clearly the whole of the Western economic system is still underpinned by super accommodative, easy monetary policy. And that's understandable in the aftermath of the type of crisis that we had in 2008. But we're 5 years on, half a decade on now. And people are beginning to wonder in the UK, as I'm sure they are in the US, which is it actually possible to put up interest rates for the Federal Reserve or the Bank of England or the European Central Bank to put up interest rates? Are we so scared of what would happen to people with mortgages or small businesses or the banking system if interest rates went back up? It's almost like it's become an addiction. And it's a very difficult call for those central bankers to know when to, if you like, take away the medicine. And it's quite frightening for them to think about what will emerge when the anesthetic is stopped.
In 2013, what nation do you think could bring down the whole house of cards tomorrow?
There's a question. Okay, I think in Europe, what we've had is a fascinating series of examples of countries that have, for different reasons, fallen over. Greece, public sector. Spain, housing. Ireland, mainly housing. UK, a bit of housing, a bit of public sector. And it's my view that what you see in Europe now is, if you like, a shadow game between Germany and France, the old foes of Europe, now very much the driving force of the European Union. And all of the negative characteristics of the countries I describe are contained in some way in France. But France is too big for Germany to tell what to do. And the real question is whether France can grow, can shrink its public debt problems. Because essentially, if that doesn't happen, Germany will have to write a very large cheque to keep Europe together. This is a sort of 2 or 3 year thing. Everything you've seen in the Eurozone crisis is in countries that are irrelevant to the world economy, but they matter as an example for how Germany wants France to act, which is a bit more like Germany. So I would say, check Paris out. It's a nice place to check out, but if the Eurozone fails, and my view is that they'll do everything it takes to keep it on the road. It's been a completely man-made source of economic fragility over the past couple of years that no one needed, that ricocheted all around the world. But the ultimate battle here is Germany trying to pull France into the 21st century economy.
Who do you bet on, Napoleon or the Kaiser here?
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing about Germany. At the end of the day, Germany is the reluctant imperium of Europe. They don't really want this role of calling the shots. And so my sense is, as Germany writes the checks, the German view on this will win. Because as we can see all around the world, it's the places where capital is abundant that do eventually call the shots, although sometimes that process takes a bit of time.
Faisal Islam, economics editor for Channel 4 News and author of The Default Line, the inside story of people, banks, and entire nations on the edge. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.